Last time on This Week in Geek, Vegeta had his sights squarely upon Mike the Birdman Dodd. Can maximum nerdosity win against the Prince of All Saiyans? Find out at thisweekingeek.net.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. Show you all the bills I drop.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Peddle for Beyond the Gauntlet here with
Jeff DeHaan.
Oh my god, it's my Dodd!
Where have we been? Besides locked in the basement of the Gauntlet.
Well, I had an evil plan that for the entire summer we would not record episodes to put mass anticipation into our massive followers.
So, might you say this is our season 2 premiere?
Yes, Mike, you might say that this is our season 2 premiere.
I'm excited for this. I've really missed like recording with you guys over the last couple months because I love getting a chance to get new perspectives on geekery. So I guess we should figure out what the hell has everybody been doing for the summer. Let's start with Jeff, and then I'll go, and Chris, we'll finish with you.
Oh, what have I been doing summer? Well, aside from, you know, the usual work, eat, and sleep, I got a podcast of my own that I do with a buddy of mine. I started that up, so we talk about pop culture stuff. Catching up on some shows. I recently actually started watching Arrow, so I'm still really behind. I'm in the first season, but
yeah, same here.
I've been enjoying that though, so I'm looking forward to it. It was actually the end of season 2 and some of the things that happened there that got me interested enough to actually watch. So I've been catching up on some shows. I've heard some good things about this show called The Nick that started up. It's got Clive Owen in it. He's like a surgeon. It's a drama. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about that show, so I might have to check that one out too. But yeah, I'm a bit of a TV junkie. Gravity Falls finally came back recently. I'm so happy about that. Anyone who listened to our cartoons episode a while back knows how much of a huge fan I am of that. So yeah, television, because, you know, why go outside?
Exactly. I myself spent a lot of the summer role-playing. If you guys follow my other podcast, thesewordsareterrible.com, as of this episode, we just finished Starship Troopers, The Black Vault, which was a really fun system. It was an open game license D20 game done by Mongoose Publishing, and that was a lot of fun. Before that, I'm trying to think what was the last game I played. I played D&D 5th edition type stuff. I got the starter kit, which is the box, which is levels 1 to 5. I got the player's handbook. I got Horde of the Dragon Queen, and I just got the Monster Manual, which should come out on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, I think. And 5th edition, it's very noob-friendly. The problem is it's really easy to take advantage of certain rules in it. Like, for example, here's a broken one a friend of mine found. Start as a fighter, multiclass into a wizard, you can now wear full plate mail and have no chance of spellcasting failure. That seems to me like a bit of an exploitable rule. I know, right? I'm like, that's not right. Other than that, I've been watching a lot of movies this summer. I just saw the new Godzilla.
Oh, great one. I just picked that up on Blu-ray not too long ago.
It was very good. Have you watched it yet, Mike?
Yeah. I just finished this past week, actually. I should have a review of that out with a few other movies. I think on Wednesday.
A lot of people were, you know, upset over the, what is it, like 8 minutes and change that Godzilla was actually on screen. But come on, you don't want them to blow their load in the first movie.
Yeah, and it's not like you can make a full movie out of two people fighting. Like truly. I mean, even Pacific Rim. You had to have characters before you cared about the big Jaegers.
Hey, I'm sorry. It had one of the coolest things I've ever seen Godzilla do in a movie, and that was when he nuked breath down the monster's
yeah,
throat.
That was pretty friggin' hardcore.
It was fantastic.
Like, when Jeff and I saw that in theaters and watched that happen, I think we both stood up and clapped.
Oh, yeah. We were both
yes!
Oh, yeah. Chris and I had a blast when we went and saw that. It was fantastic. And some things I found out about that movie, actually, afterwards. Apparently, for the way Godzilla fights, they modeled him after a bear. If you actually watch him fight now,
I can see that.
Like, with the arms and, like, you know, and, like, his whole upper body, very bear-like.
I like that.
Yeah, and I've heard for the second movie they're going to take him off of Steven Seagal. So you look forward to some net breaking, you know.
I like it. I'm looking forward to that, actually. And Chris, what have you been up to this summer at the Gauntlet?
Well, you know, I'm at the store all the time. I practically live there. In fact, I'm there 6 out of 7 days a week. But for the most part, I've been doing a lot of artist days where I get all the artists to come out to the store and do their thing, draw commission pieces for people, sell their prints, do original stuff. I actually wanted to kind of give a shout out to my my friend and artist companion, Mad Sketch. You know who you are out there, Mad Sketch. But Mad Sketch has started up a new website called thesequentials.com. And it's a really cool idea for a site. It's a kind of an artist meets writer site where writers can post stuff online and match them to artists they think fit well.
Oh,
and
that's
so they
a great
can do
idea.
Independent comics.
You because need to get, we need to put that address in here because I got a friend of mine who's trying to write a comic, but he
yeah.
lacks an artist.
That's well, and this is what his website is. It's for artists looking for writers and vice versa. And the idea is you sign up for the site and you basically are guaranteed to have your work protected by thesequentials.com. And if you're a writer, you post a couple pages of a draft to your script, to your comic script. And then a writer can look at the first few pages of your comic to see if it's the sort of thing that fits his style. Or you can actually go to the artist gallery if you're a writer, and you can look for a style of an artist who's posted some art up there to see if you can hit him up and be like, hey, dude, I like your style. Can you draw my comic?
That's a fantastic idea.
That's really cool.
We've talked about on a number of occasions how, especially with, like, say, Marvel, how the art doesn't reflect the tone of the book or vice versa or whatever. And
exactly.
That's a fantastic
idea. The other cool thing with the sequentials.com is you can actually set it up through the sequentials that your comic can be released as a web comic either weekly, biweekly, monthly, however fast you and the artist can get it out. So you don't even necessarily have to right away have to worry about finding printing rights.
That's nice. Really sweet. That's
so cool. you can build a following for your comic book through the internets before actually going to print.
Oh, props to Mad Sketch on that. That's a fantastic idea.
That's yeah. legit, pimp.
Yeah, like worst come to worst, like once we get that address and everything, we'll be sure and shoot it along on an episode, or at least in show notes if we
yeah,
can.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll yeah. be in the show notes for this episode. So speaking of this episode, guys, we're going to be talking about episodes. We're actually going to be talking about the fall TV stuff, what we've seen, what we haven't seen, what we'd like to see, and what's likely going to get canceled along the way.
Well, Mike, I mean, one of the episodes that we get the biggest feedback from people coming into the store and tweeting us and emailing us are the ones that we do when we talk about television or movies. People really get behind, you know, our conviction.
Well, I feel
with those things.
I feel like those things are a little more accessible. Like, even if somebody isn't a fan of comic books in general,
everyone has TV.
Everyone's got TV. You know, I mean, do you really think that everybody that, you know, goes and sees the Avengers or Guardians of the Galaxy actually read the comics? Of course not. So television and movies are a little more accessible. So I think that helps. And who doesn't want to hear us pontificate over pop culture?
Exactly. That's kind of
well,
why
that's
we
what,
do this.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
Exactly.
So I guess what has everybody seen? The most recent...
Well, do we want to start with returning shows or the new stuff?
Let's talk new, then we'll talk returning.
All right.
So coming out new this year, this fall, we have The Flash, done by the same group that did Arrow.
Which was one of the biggest reasons, actually, that I decided to jump into Arrow. Between The Flash and the kind of quasi-reveal at the end of season 2... it was kind of a Suicide Squad thing, I think. I haven't seen the episode. I only saw some clips. But those two things are what really kind of got me wanting to check out Arrow.
Same here.
Because I was never a big fan of Smallville. Maybe it's just because I'm not a huge Superman fan. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's going to be like Smallville, but with Green Arrow, it'll be great. And I'm like, that's not a selling point for me.
Yeah, well, I think Green Arrow is more grounded, and they don't make radical changes to the characters.
You know what, though? I really like Stephen Amell. I think
he's a great Green Arrow.
I think he's doing a great job. And some people say he's a little, you know, like one-dimensional in his stoicism. But all you have to do, if you're watching season one as well, Chris mm-hmm. is completely caught up, but you're at least along with me on season one. You can really see the difference between the flashbacks when he's on the island mm-hmm. and, like, his current self. Like, there's obviously, you know, seen some shit.
Yeah, yeah, like, there is a definite depth to his character there.
Yeah, you can tell. I mean, this is a character that has been through hell and back again. Quite possibly, literally, being that we're only in the third season, so it might still be coming.
Yep.
And you can see it on his face in the difference between more of his innocent kind of, I was just a rich kid thrust into being stuck on an island, to coming back from the island and clearly saying that this guy's, you know, both physically and emotionally scarred from it.
The only thing I don't like is he's got the worst secret identity this side of Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Everybody and their dog finds out who this guy is by the looks of things. I mean, it's not really that many, but where I am, and I'm not even done season one, there's like three or four of the main cast that know who he is already.
Yeah, I'm like, how did you not figure this out?
Apparently the writers, because I've got a friend who she actually writes for a blog called Capital Geek Girls out of Ottawa. So there's your plug, Courtney. She's a huge fan of the show, and she was telling me that apparently the writers... that's their least favorite part of the whole, when they're writing, is having to write the secret identity stuff. So maybe that's their way of saying, well, you know, if Iron Man could get away with it,
why not this guy?
Yeah. But I've been enjoying that one. And that's, like I said, we started off talking about Flash and I jumped into Green Arrow, but, that has me really excited for Flash.
Yeah. Flash is, I think, the one I might stick with more than Green Arrow, because I still have to catch up on two seasons worth of stuff.
The cool thing about Flash was the pilot to the Flash a couple months ago was leaked. And now when I say leaked, I think it was intentionally leaked.
Oh, absolutely.
It was intentionally leaked just so people could actually find, download, and watch the pilot to Flash, just so they could get an idea. And after watching the pilot to Flash, it was extremely enjoyable.
I've really liked, and I've only seen this from the promos that they've shown between Flash and Arrow. I've really liked how they're handling his abilities. Like, this, his super speed doesn't look cheesy. You know, they're not overdoing it with, like, slow-mo by the looks of things. It looks like it's really well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those shows where it's meant to be a little bit more light as opposed to Arrow's very...
Flash has always been somewhat of a, not a comical character,
but he's more lighthearted. Yeah.
He's lighthearted, yeah, especially if you look at Michael Rosenbaum's portrayal in the Justice League cartoons.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, when it comes to an ensemble setting, Flash is almost like the comic relief, but, you know, he's a guy that's got a good heart.
He's kind of like Spider-Man in the sense that he's not afraid to wisecrack while he's beating up the villain.
Exactly.
Plus, I really think the Flash has a really awesome rogues gallery, too. And that, and it's like a Prison Break reunion show.
Yeah, and the cool thing that they're doing with the Flash television show is they're actually, where Arrow has been introducing a lot of low-powered characters, a lot of characters that are a little bit more possible. I mean, in the first season, they went against guys like Merlin, Deadshot. They also went against like the
Count Vertigo.
The second season, he got into, like, Brass Tiger and...
Street-level guys. Like, not necessarily, but like, Flash... obviously Deathstroke's not one to, you know, cast off, but they're still very much almost grounded in realism because he doesn't have powers himself.
Exactly, and in Flash, they're introducing characters, like, in the pilot, Weather Wizard is in it, and you're going to have Captain Cold, they're going to introduce Killer Frost, they're going to introduce...
Captain Boomerang, too, right?
Yeah, Captain Boomerang, which...
I'm looking forward to that guy.
Well, that lends itself to what Mike said. I mean, you know, the Flash is the only character whose rogues gallery is literally, like, when someone says the rogues, they're talking about Flash's rogues gallery,
yeah.
You know? Like, they're really well-known, and DC's always done a pretty good job with the comics. Like, back when... Wally West was it Wally West was murdered, or maybe it was when Bart Allen took over as the Flash. It was a few years ago, but you know, the rogues killed the Flash, quote unquote, and then it was right before Barry Allen had come back.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, this is pre-52 and everything. But and it was, you know, there was the Rogues Revenge, and they've always I feel like they've always treated the Flash's rogues gallery fairly well. Which is interesting, considering when you look at them, they're kind of a hokey ragtag band of misfits. Like, you look at all their powers and stuff, like Captain Boomerang, he throws boomerangs, which, by the way, I loved in the Assault on Arkham animated movie, mm-hmm. How Harley's like, and don't get me started on you, Boomerang, being just a metaphor for your inability to be able to let things go. But yeah, and like, and Captain Cold, you know, like he's got the Eskimo sunglasses with like the little slit in them, and Killer. It'll be interesting if they bring Captain Cold and Killer Frost into the show.
They are.
Together.
The Killer Frost vibe is also going to be introduced. So it's going to be interesting. Now, when it comes to DC Comics, Flash is not the only show that doing. Because also at the same time that the Flash pilot was leaked, the Constantine pilot was leaked.
Which I have seen. Although, interesting, since seeing that pilot, I've heard that they've actually recast the female lead in the show.
Yeah, there was creative differences with the female lead, which I think boiled down to...
She sucked.
She wasn't terrible.
From what I understand, she was a bit of a diva on set. Nobody wanted to deal with her special needs. So they let her go for creative differences because she was difficult to work with.
You know what? So she had Michelle Rodriguez syndrome then.
Correct.
Okay. You know what? That's fine. I would rather, and I think, you know, everybody would, but rather have, you know, a cast that everybody can work around with than somebody who's going to act like a diva or like Bruce Willis.
Now, I mean, this...
Greedy and lazy.
This Constantine, you've seen the pilot.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mike, have you seen the pilot yet?
No, not yet, but it's one of the shows I'm so looking forward
really
to.
Really interesting. It's got... Oh, crap. I can't remember his name. One of the guys from Lost. He was in it from the beginning. Black guy from Lost. He had the beard.
Isn't the guy that plays Constantine... Isn't that the guy from Assassin's Creed 4? The guy that plays Edward Kenway. Let me look that up. Continue, guys.
You look that up.
All I know is the actor playing Constantine this time around is definitely an upgrade from Keanu Reeves.
And I didn't mind the Keanu movie, but I agree. It's nice to see, first of all, somebody with a proper British accent playing Constantine.
Right, and he actually looks like Constantine with blonde hair and the actual jacket.
The only thing that kind of got me, and this is by no means any fault of the actor, it actually has more to do with the network and stuff like that. It was kind of weird seeing Constantine walk around for an hour without having a cigarette. And that has more to do with network stuff and probably smoking.
Exactly.
It's kind of weird. There was a couple times where you saw him, he'd pull one out and then he'd have to put it back or whatever, or like maybe he just puts one out. But you didn't see him with a cigarette very often. And from what I know of Constantine, I've read a couple comics and stuff.
Oh, he's a chain smoker.
He's a chain smoker, exactly.
Yeah,
so.
Supposedly they're like going to cut that out because of the network. But yeah, the guy who's playing Constantine, Matt Ryan... That's Edward Kenway from Assassin's... Or, sorry, Matt Ryan, yeah. He's the guy from Assassin's Creed 4 who played Edward Kenway, the lead in that series. I am so into this, because I love this guy.
It was a really great show, especially if you're into supernatural stuff. Like, if you like a show like Supernatural, for example, this has a similar vibe in the, you know, dark aspects of it. It's not necessarily... You know, like Supernatural, which I'm a big fan of, does have its hokey episodes and stuff like that. From the one episode, you know, this doesn't necessarily have hokey humor, but there was a couple chuckle moments, I thought.
There'll be some light humor in it.
A little bit to it. I mean, you don't want to be serious all the time either, so.
They're taking a much darker look at the Supernatural.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really going to be playing up the heaven versus hell.
Oh, for sure.
They're going to be playing up that, you know, things that go bump in the night belong to Team Evil. But I mean, the Constantine comic books have always been, because the show is based off the Hellblazer comic book series,
yeah.
Where Constantine gets himself into a lot of situations that are not meant for children.
Mm-hmm.
The show is going to be a little bit more, I think, viewer friendly in this regard. But if you ever read the Hellblazer comic books with Constantine, they are definitely not for.
Even
a
still,
younger
like,
audience.
I thought the effects were pretty good in this pilot episode, and even still, I don't know if you'd want too many kind of younger viewers watching it just for, like, I'm talking, I guess, you know, really young, but I mean, it's like, there were some really kind of, you know, spooky, creepy moments where, like, you know, little, like, 7-8-year-old Jeff probably wouldn't have wanted to watch that kind of thing, so.
Yeah, yeah, no, the Constantine show is definitely going to have some promise.
It's a matter of how people get into it, because they're obviously not necessarily selling it as from the comic books of DC, you know, it's very much like it's its own thing, because obviously if you put that comic book label on it, people are going to look at it like a Flash, Gotham, Green Arrow.
Well, the thing is, they're taking a lot of the plot devices for the show from the Hellblazer comic book, and Hellblazer itself was actually a Vertigo comic book. which Vertigo is owned
That's
by
very
DC,
true.
But Vertigo was their adult company.
They had
their
own sandbox
company.
To play in. They didn't have to necessarily be like...
Worry about the DC
That's
proper.
One thing that DC was really cool with when they had Vertigo, was saying, okay, you guys do your thing. You know,
yeah.
You're Vertigo, you're not DC technically, you know.
So does that mean, because I know, or at least from what I understand, isn't people like Swamp Thing really involved in Constantine in some ways? Like he's friends with the guy?
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw an appearance.
Yeah. Oh my god, I hope so. I love Swamp Thing.
There will probably be some Swamp Thing tie-ins, because Constantine and Swamp Thing are both part of the House of Mystery. And in the pilot, they've already shown you that the House of Mystery is there.
Yeah.
So what other characters could appear? Like ones that are supernatural ones?
I don't know who has been cast and what has been cast, but there is a good potential that
the
we're going to see.
In it.
We're going to see the Spectre. We're probably going to see Zatanna.
Oh my god, I would love to see Zatanna.
We're probably going to see characters like Etrigan.
That might be a tough one. I mean, they got good effects, but that might be a tough one to pull.
Well, they'll probably have Jason Blood for sure.
We might have Jason Blood, and then maybe down the line they'll bring in Etrigan. That would be cool.
Yeah, we're probably going to see a lot of the supernatural characters from the DC universe.
Basically, look at
Deadman will probably make an appearance.
Possibly. My hair doppelganger, Clarion the Witch Boy.
Oh, yes, yeah. Madame Xanadu will probably be in there.
That one, yeah, almost for sure. Basically, look at Justice League Dark, and with the possible exception of, like, Frankenstein, you'll probably get almost every character in there.
It's going to be so cool. I'm so hyped for this show.
Yeah, if you like the spooky and, like, you know, supernatural and dark shows, I think this is the one for you to check out for
sure.
Well,
I'm thinking, because isn't this Supernatural's last year?
I don't know. It's their 10th season, so they definitely don't have long. I haven't heard if this is their last season or not.
The funny thing is, I was watching actually some panel stuff that Jensen Ackles and
Jared
Padalecki and Sam and Dean Winchester, for those of you who don't know, as well as Misha Collins. They were all on the panel, and they were saying that there's the potential that they may be going to 12 seasons.
Oh my god.
There's the potential that they may be going for 12 seasons, but they won't know for sure. They won't find out if season 11 is signed on until at least two episodes into the viewing of the season.
That's a show where, and while it's not a comic book show, I feel like it's one that could definitely fit in here. They've definitely got their fandoms, and they've got their supernatural
fans. I'm a huge Supernatural fan. I mean, they had their rocky moments season 6 and 7, but...
Oh, definitely.
They've gotten better again. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed season 8 and 9.
I completely agree, and the big reveal, I won't say anything here, but the big reveal at the end of season 9 has me so hyped for this season, like you would not believe.
Disgustingly amazing. Season, I'm very happy to see that Crowley...
Mark Shepard.
Yeah, played by Mark Shepard. He's actually now been officially designated a regular on the show.
Which is fantastic, because another great guy. A lot of people would know him. He's been on Firefly, and he's done a lot of...
He's been in Warehouse 13. Yeah. He's been, of course, in Supernatural. He's been in a lot of stuff. He's been in episodes... of Leverage,
X-Files,
he's been in X-Files, you know. He's been in...
Basically, any kind of... that's one thing I find. My wife and I watch a lot of TV, DVDs and stuff, and we gravitate towards some of these, like, supernatural shows, and a lot of them are filmed in BC, and you start seeing the same actors on all these different shows, because they're all filmed in the same area.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny, but yeah, Mark Shepard...
I love Mark Shepard,
I'm glad he's
a regular... His screen presence is just amazing.
I liked him in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when he showed up there.
Misha Collins is also back to regular status. I mean, he had a bigger role in season 9 than he did in season 8, but I heard that I think season 10 he's pretty much going to be back to full
schedule. Yeah, exactly.
As well.
I am looking forward to the way they ended season 9 has me so stoked for season 10.
Oh, me too. So yeah, anybody who's a fan of that show, I think will solidly enjoy Constantine for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Which also brings us to they announced that there will be a Supergirl show coming with the next lineup.
A lot of people are
as well
about
as the Teen Titans.
Oh, I didn't hear about the Teen Titans.
TNT
yet.
TNT got the rights to do a Teen Titans live action.
Nice.
That's going to be Nightwing, Raven, Aqualad and a couple others that are going to be part of that show.
And this is going to be live action. Right?
Live action, yeah.
And TNT, that's a nice way to possibly get around. Because whenever you said that, I'm like, huh, I wonder if they'll have Robin, because Robin is obviously so heavily tied in with Batman, and there's always a lot of, even though it's all DC and Warner Brothers, there still sometimes are rights issues with Batman characters and stuff.
Especially so
it's interesting,
when it gets tied in the film rights,
but
too.
Exactly. But using him as Nightwing is a good way around that. Plus, it gives a more adult scope for the characters, or at least, like, you know, he's not like a 13 or 14 year old Robin.
Now,
he'll
and
probably,
here's
like
the interesting
at least 17, 18.
Here's the interesting thing: the Montreal Comic Con, Stephen Amell was there, and he actually said, due to the fact that all these shows are coming out and they may be on different networks, but Warner Brothers, who technically owns the rights to everything because they own DC Comics, mm-hmm. he said that they are going to be doing a. And they've already talked to him about it, and the people that are in all these other movies, a actual more of a Justice Society movie or Justice League International movie with all the TV stars doing it as a 5-part TV movie that's going to have, when all of these come out, that the Teen Titans, Supergirl, Arrow, all these characters are all going to be in this. And he actually revealed at the Montreal Comic Con that this is definitely something that is in the works.
Well, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe Stephen Amell's Canadian, isn't he?
I don't know.
I thought he was.
Mike can find the answer to this.
I could be way off, and if I am, you know, I apologize, but I thought I heard something recently that he was Canadian, because he was doing a lot with the Montreal Comic Con. He was actually supporting a charity called, and here's our PG-13, but this is what the charity's called, Fuck Cancer. And he was doing a lot of promotion whenever he came in for Montreal Comic Con, because I have a bunch of friends that went to that con and went and saw him and saw a lot of stuff. So, He was doing a lot of promoting, and obviously,
yep, he was born in Toronto.
There we go, perfect. So obviously, you know, Canada is a big part of his heart and everything. So it's good to see whenever he comes back, he does a lot of good like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've heard there's been some gripes about this Supergirl show because apparently she's going to be aged up to 24.
I'm okay with that, though.
Big deal.
It's the fact that she's aged up to 24 and she's still.
Well, the reason they're apparently aging her up to 24 is they are actually trying to get Laura Vandervoort back to play her.
Oh, ooh. My God, make it happen.
That would be
and,
cool, but it
and
might
they're
be
also,
tricky.
Tom Wellings has also said that when the show happens, if they need him for cameos, he will make himself available.
Ooh.
So they could happen. Tie it into the Smallville universe.
That would be interesting. Vandervoort is also, she stars in a show called, a werewolf show called Bitten that I am a huge fan of. So I,
yeah, but you know the fan outcry on that show? It may be canceled.
Yeah, I was
know. Everybody
was
who's read those books is bitching that the show is nothing like the books. And
well, I haven't read the books, so there you go.
But I know that Tawny, my girlfriend, refuses to watch the show after watching like the first 5 or 6 episodes of the first season.
Interesting. So. Well, even still, it's not like people haven't juggled more than one TV show at a time in the past. So.
And speaking of network screwing shows up, let's get to Gotham.
You know what? I have hope for this. But here's the problem. Someone brought this up, I think it was on Kotaku or IO9's comment section, and they said, okay, so it's firmly established that this is a Batman-less Gotham right now. But if Jim Gordon can solve all these crimes, why do we need Batman?
And this is one of the problems. Now the other problem is, after watching the first episode, I felt that I had three major gripes with the show. Number one, it felt empty. And when I say empty, it feels like the actors kind of just phoned their lines in. There was no humanity to their acting. It was almost like they just said, hey, we're going to need a generic bad cop. Bullock, you take on the generic bad cop acting basket. Hey, we're going to need you to take on the goody two-shoes cop acting. It's like there's no personality in these characters. And in the first episode, the only character I felt like I made any sort of connection with was Cobblepot.
I knew you were going to say that. Him?
He's the only guy out of the entire episode that I felt actually acted.
That role was so perfectly
Jada
cast.
Jada Pinkett Smith, you could replace her with anybody, and it would have been the exact same.
She kind of reminded me of Niobe from The Matrix Reloaded, because you can't separate her from her previous role. She's always Jada Pinkett Smith, which is why the same. Like, and her husband Will Smith now suffers from this problem. It's not Will Smith is Hancock. It's Will Smith with superpowers.
Exactly. She's been typecast so much, and she's just I didn't get it that much vibe. My second complaint with the show is they went way too far and above to try connecting everyone. Like everybody in Batman's history has some sort of hidden connection, like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon style.
6 degrees of Batman.
6 degrees of Batman. Like everyone in his past that becomes part of his rogues gallery. And here's the problem with Batman. Batman created most of his rogues gallery. Batman created most of his rogues gallery, except for maybe Cobblepot. But I'm just waiting for them to go, and Cobblepot leaves the city and joins up with a freak show circus and meets a lonely crocodile man who ends up, they break out of the circus and end up finding the Flying Graysons, which then they end up going somewhere else and they come across three mad scientists, one working on cryogenics, one working on fear toxins, and one working on how to introduce a bat genome into his own thing. And it's like, none of this crap happened until Batman came to be.
Well, you know what's funny? You mentioned the Flying Graysons, because I actually did name drop that in the first episode with Jim. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw the Flying Graysons last night.
Well, I know.
Like, I don't know. Like, the problem with this, with it being a Batman-less Batman show, is you're taking out the really cool parts of the mythos. I know you're trying to ground it more in reality. I think that may hurt it, but maybe the show will be strong because it isn't filled with superheroes. But then again, what's the point?
Can the Batman fan chime in?
Yes, I will. Yeah, like, tell me how this is going to work.
I enjoyed it. I wasn't like, oh my god, it's the greatest thing in television history. Screw the moon landing. Gotham is it. You know, it wasn't like
I didn't get to my third point. Can I bring up my third point real quick first?
Can.
Australian Alfred just bothered me.
Okay.
Australian Alfred. He was clearly an Australian Alfred.
I wanted to,
because he's played by an Australian actor, and the guy dropped the name. It was like, come on, Bruce, mate, let's get going. It's like I don't want Steve Irwin being like, crikey, Bruce.
I think that'd be amazing.
Okay, I want to touch on your 3 points. Number one, the cast. I actually I liked Gordon, and I liked Donald Logue, who did Bullock. I enjoyed those two. I thought they did a great job, personally. I completely agree with Jada Pinkett Smith. I completely agree about Cobblepot. Big thing with Cobblepot is the fact that, from what I've heard, his rise to power is basically going to be the first season arc. Which is fine, because, you know, he's got a lot of ties with the mob and everything anyways. You know, and I'm just thankful they didn't make him a mutant like Danny DeVito. But as far as the cast goes, like I said, I like the two leads. The kid playing Bruce was okay. He's a child actor. What are you going to do?
Well, you can see in his face he's got that intensity when he's talking.
I liked that they had him scream when his parents were murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Because you usually see, you know, stoic silence from child Bruce Wayne. And it's like, you're an 8-year-old who just watched your parents get gunned down. Freak the hell out.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad of that. But so I don't agree with your Gordon and Bullock comments, but I do understand where you're coming from with the cast. Your second point was the connectivity, correct?
Yes.
I do agree with that. That's just, I think, trying to cater to your average audience. Especially, like, if you look at any kind of crime procedural nowadays, there's so many callbacks, and, like, for longtime fans, it's like, oh, this person from this season, oh, look, they had ties to, you know, so it's... So I understand that. I did hear that from the creators, apparently they jammed the first episode pretty full because it was the first episode, so they wanted to try to come out strong right out of the gate, and maybe they maybe they overfilled it.
I think so. Like, I mean, they had Selina Kyle, a.k.a. the future Catwoman, witness Bruce Wayne's murder, or Bruce Wayne's parents' murder,
They could have kept her out of the entire episode. She had no reason to be in there. She didn't interact with a single person. She literally just kind of was around. She's either hanging out on the Wayne gate at the end, or like she's in the fire escapes and stuff like that. Okay. She had no reason to be there. So I agree with that.
Riddle me this, Jeff man. Why is Poison Ivy not Pamela Isley? Why is she
Pepper.
Ivy Peppers?
Because
the writers are stupid.
Okay.
It gives her an alias later, I guess?
Possibly. I don't know. I also, I like, one thing that I both liked and didn't like, I like that the Riddler is a forensic, he works for the police and he's like the forensics guy.
No, I was totally down with that. I did enjoy that.
He looked cool.
I like that. I don't like that they revealed him so early.
Yeah.
I would have liked them to talk to the forensic guy. Maybe he's doing, and instead of having him go, well, riddle me this, Jim,
yeah,
have him be doing a crossword whenever they walk in and have...
And just refer to him as like Eddie or something.
They don't even have to be, they don't even have to say that. They could, but they don't even have to say his name. They'd be like, hey, we need you to do this. And they could have had that be a major reveal. This is one thing I was talking about with my brother not too long ago, is that they could have made that a huge reveal, and in stuff they almost made it kind of a, you know, a wink and a nod in joke in the first episode, and now it's like every time somebody sees Enigma on screen now, they're just gonna be like, oh well,
oh, that's the Riddler,
when's he gonna turn? We don't, they're not gonna take any good he does as the forensic guy seriously, because they know he's gonna be the Riddler eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they're kind of going with that, though, because a part of the thing with Riddler's background originally was he was a scientist that no one took seriously. So maybe they're going for that, because as a forensic scientist, maybe no one will take him seriously, and then that will give them the reason to snap, and that actually kind of works with that.
Yes, but they could have done that without revealing that he was Edward Nygma.
This is true.
Right now.
This
That's
is
what
true.
I'm saying. And as far as your Alfred thing, Batman Earth 1, plain and simple. Just about every incarnation, like you look at Beware the Batman, the CG series they did, they had the badass Alfred that could fight, and now we've got, I mean, yes, the Australian thing, I understand what you're saying there, it's just a poor accent choice from the actor, but they're making, Alfred, every incarnation of Alfred, it seems, since Earth 1 came out a couple years ago, is more of a gruff, you know, almost grizzled veteran.
I want my Michael Caine Alfred.
Yeah, let's get him. Come on, he's not dead yet.
I want Ephraim, although he is dead.
Through the maelgut of cloning.
But no, I completely, completely agree. But they want, that seems to be because Earth 1 was, which is Geoff Johns, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Earth 1 was so well received that seems to be the model that people go by for Alfred nowadays. I mean, even you look at Batman versus Superman, you got Jeremy Irons. He doesn't, if you had to choose between those two
archetypes. Is that the guy from the D&D movie?
Jeremy Irons, yeah, he was also in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
So if you take just those two archetypes, you know, the staunchy British butler, or the former British Secret Service, you know, rough and tumble, you know, type, which one do you think Jeremy Irons is more likely to play?
The badass.
Thank you. Exactly. So that seems to be the model for Alfred that they use nowadays. I'm not saying I agree with it. I understand. Look at my Batman of choice is the animated series. And I realize it's animated, not live action, but that voice cast did such an amazing job for so many years. That's what I see as those roles. And, you know, stepping out of that, it takes you out of the picture. So
you know what I think would be great for Gotham, and this would be a really cool callback? I'd like them to hire Kevin Conroy to be a voice on a phone. Or something.
That would be nice.
That would be really funny.
Like, if you go back, this isn't comic related, but I'll make it brief. You go back to the old TV show Frasier. Mm-hmm. He was the radio psychologist. They had so many celebrity guests that were just phone-ins for like 30 seconds.
That'd be great.
So that would be cool if they did something like that. I would mark out pretty huge if Conroy showed up on.
Now there's a lot of things that are being said. A lot of speculations, like the dancing girls in the club were wearing black and red, therefore one of them must be Harley Quinn for later on.
They had the stand-up comic who
and
was...
And the comic who is supposed to be possibly the future Joker, and things like that. And you know what? That stuff drives me up the wall, because the Joker was crazy because
so
Batman
stupid.
Dropped the Nevada
Well,
Chemicals.
Not even just that, but you look at Enigma, even if he's young, if he's a police forensic scientist, he obviously had to go to school for something like that. Mm-hmm. So he's no less than his mid-20s, correct?
Probably, yeah.
So, and if Bruce Wayne's only 8, that means you've got easily 15 years minimum before Batman shows up. You know, it's like, how old are these villains going to be?
It's
going to
be awesome. Geriatric Batman, or sorry,
geriatric Rose. No wonder he can beat them all so
easily.
Yeah,
I know.
This is why I think they've kind of gone in the wrong direction with this show. I think what they should have done was not introduce any Batman rogues, except for maybe Cobblepot is the only person, because Cobblepot is an older guy who did work his way up through the crime families.
Yes.
Okay? He's the only character in the Batverse that I can expect that maybe crossed cross paths with Jim Gordon in before. And it's
maybe
like
Carmine
saying,
Falcone too.
Well, no, Carmine Falcone, yeah, that one I accept because it's
we're talking like his, you know, his rogues as opposed to just the mob. I mean, we know he does the mob stuff.
Right.
I can see the
Batman
Riddler.
Batman created most of his rogues gallery by just being there and causing something bad to happen to somebody.
And even still, there's certain ones. I mean, obviously, they're going to muddle with certain origins and stuff for TV shows. But they could have picked more street-level guys. They could have had a huge arc with Black Mask for this show.
That would be so cool.
Black Mask had been around before Batman.
Yeah, they could have, because Black Mask has apparently been several people that just keep passing the mask on. They could do a Red Hood thing.
I was about to say, they could do Red Hood. Exactly.
They could do a Red Hood thing. And everything. But my problem with this is what you're saying is a lot of these characters, by the time Batman is Batman, they would be either too old, or what's the point of doing a cop show about Jim Gordon being the super cop that earns his commissionerhood if he can't even catch a simple frigging criminal because they all become Batman's rogues gallery anyway.
But at the same time, if he does his job, then why do we have Batman?
Yeah.
What Mike said earlier.
Exactly.
This is why, and I said this from day one, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the show well enough. I'll probably continue to watch it because I am such a big Batman fan. But I think they should have done more of a Gotham Central approach. Instead of being pre-Batman, just do a show from the GCPD, the Gotham City Police Department.
Do it from the perspective of the police and how they handle the super criminals.
And it could
and
still,
how they deal with Batman being around.
It could have still been a pre-Batman, but it doesn't have to be. How many times do we have to see Thomas and Martha get shot, for the love of God? You know, it didn't have to be a Bruce Wayne origin story.
Exactly.
It could have been, like, he could have been gone to school. I mean, look at how many years was Bruce Wayne gone to boarding school and gone halfway across the world to get trained and everything like that. This show could have taken place entirely during that time. And that's when the city really went to shit. And then, you know, they could have culminated to the last season being where Batman shows up.
I just feel for a show that's supposed to be about Jim Gordon, they're putting too much emphasis on Batman's rogues gallery.
Because it's Batman.
I don't think they know what direction they want to take now. I think we'll know ultimately where this show's going to end up probably by the mid-season hiatus that'll happen in December.
Yeah.
And this show's on Fox. Let's not forget that little gem. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes,
The Fox. Thing is, though, I think this show, if it's even remotely like half decent, I think it'll last because it's Batman related.
And I think Warner Brothers is going to convince Fox, we'll keep giving you money if you make this show not stupid, because they need something to carry us through 2015 to get us excited for 2016.
And here's the other thing too, Mike, is if they do a decent first and possibly second season, maybe they'll eventually earn the rights to have Batman. Therefore, Gotham may end up having Batman eventually show up as a character in the show.
It's true. There's nothing saying they can't fast forward, a little bit.
Right now, there's no Batman, but you never know. They could, between each season, put a 5-year gap or something.
There's an even bigger reveal that I'm looking forward to besides Batman. When is Gordon getting the soup strainer?
Yes. Yes.
What? I can't
Jim Gordon without a mustache is just weird.
Yes. But actually, let's go to a show that actually seems to be doing it right. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
episode 1. Oh
yes!
Oh my God!
Which got a lot of criticism during its first season, too, because I think a lot of people looked at it and were like, they were expecting Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Every week.
Every week, but just on a smaller screen. And with all due respect to the show, because I enjoyed the first season, it didn't deliver if that was your expectation in the first season. But it's a Whedon show. There's always going to be a slow build. I thought they crafted the first season really well, and the last handful of episodes were fantastic.
The last half of the season was just some of the best television I've watched in a while.
And I thought after going through the first season, seeing the season premiere for season 2, that I think is probably what people were expecting from season 1 every week, because that was a fantastic episode. And I'm going to say right off the bat, because I don't know if we can actually keep our mouths shut, if you haven't seen the season premiere of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for season 2, maybe pause it and go watch it now, because there's probably going to be spoilers coming up.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. The fact that one of the things I loved is they took a named villain and made him from lame to awesome.
I wouldn't even say lame, per se. I've always liked Absorbing Man. What I like is that they took a villain who, while he's no Magneto or, like, Doctor Doom, he's also not a low level, like, terrible person. Like,
he's not the Shocker.
He's a part of Hulk's rogues gallery. Like, yeah. He's a decent part. Like, he's going toe-to-toe with Hulk. You know, Chris would be a better authority on that since he's our resident Hulk guy. But Absorbing Man was fantastic.
Well, Absorbing Man has gone definitely against the Hulk. He's also... He does scrap with a lot of the lower-tier characters as well. So for a villain to go against depowered agents and things like that, he's the perfect candidate.
Be a threat.
Because he's a big enough threat because he can, if you don't know about, spoiler alert here, Absorbing Man has the ability to touch an inorganic material and turn himself into a living version of that material. So if he touched polyester, he would become polyester. If he touched steel, he would become steel. If he touched rubber, he would become rubber, etc.
Side point to that, just really quick. I have a She-Hulk comic at home where she's taking on Absorbing Man near a toy store. She knocks him into Lego, and he turns into Lego, and then she shatters him. Fantastic moment.
Now, has Absorbing Man, I'm guessing this has already happened, he's touched Vibranium and Adamantium, right?
He has done it before, yes.
Yeah, but it's not a memory thing. It's not like if he turns himself to Adamantium once, he can always do that. He has to actually touch it every single time.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah.
So
yeah.
It like wears off after like half an hour.
Yeah,
or something?
It eventually does wear off,
and he can turn it off on
at
will.
Or he can turn it off at will, but eventually it does wear off of him. That's why he can only when he touches stuff, he has to physically be there to touch it.
Now there was a theory that I read about this, and this kind of ties into Absorbing Man. There are no concrete plans for a second Hulk movie yet.
I don't think so. They've definitely been holding it off for sure.
That's not entirely true.
Have they changed it?
They are waiting, from what I have understood, when Thanos finally shows up to fight the Avengers, and Thanos fights Hulk, the ramifications of that is Thanos will use one of the Infinity Gems to banish Hulk to another planet, and thus they're going to do a Planet Hulk movie.
I've really heard that not. As well.
Ruffalo actually said that is their plans. The problem is they're not entirely sure the time frame on that.
Well, it's
due
so
to the fact that
advance.
There's quite a few movies to lead up to that still.
I hope they don't, and I like Planet Hulk and everything, but it's like...
That'd be so much better animated.
It is already animated.
You know, I don't want to necessarily see that.
I want to see Hulk punch Thanos. I'm sorry. I want to see that live action.
So, you can still see that.
I want that.
Now...
I thought they did, just to kind of cap this off, they did a fantastic job on Absorbing Man in this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his abilities were done very well.
He looks like Absorbing Man.
I love when he went to pick up the artifact at the end. I'm like, is he going to grab, like, her severed hand? No. He touched the tire
yes.
and turned his hand to rubber to pick it up. They handled him so well. And granted, this actor didn't have very many speaking parts in this, but he doesn't need it.
Like, he looked like a goon. It was good.
He was a goon, this hulking brute with this fantastic ability, and it was done so well.
I almost squealed with glee when he picked up the ball and chain off the actual
yes.
thing mm-hmm. in the park. I was just like, oh my God, they went there. Beautiful.
They did a fantastic job with this guy.
Now, okay, here's another thing. I love how they're handling Coulson, how he's become the director now.
Yes.
That is fantastic. I'm hoping that this season sets up more characters. And more importantly, what I'm hoping the season does is bring us to a nice lead-in to Avengers 2.
Now, that's the big thing that they're trying to do. Like, there will be a crossover episode. They've already stated
that. I think they're probably going to do the same thing with Avengers Age of Ultron that they did with
Thor and Captain America.
Especially Winter Soldier, because there were such huge ramifications between both the show and the movie. The problem is, I think they're still going to want to. I thought they did a fantastic job with that, of someone who wasn't watching the movies but was watching the show wouldn't get lost, and vice versa. You know, they played it up really well, and I think they'd probably have to do the same thing with Avengers, too. They're not going to have something happen in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where if you didn't watch it, you'd be lost in Avengers, you know?
Yeah. The thing that I'm looking forward to is there's been some rumors floating around the grapevine. Now, whether they're true or not, I don't know, because this is all hearsay until it happens. But I've heard that Winter Soldier may be making an appearance, that Sebastian Shaw may be in an episode, because after the events of Winter Soldier, with him showing up in the after-credits scene in the mm-hmm. museum mm-hmm. looking at the Captain America exhibit, that he might be showing up in an episode on S.H.I.E.L.D. just to keep him in motion.
Which is a smart plan, because obviously they're not going to have another Cap for a while, since Avengers is the main thing of 2015, that and Ant-Man.
And again, at the San Diego Comic-Con, Ruffalo actually said that he's supposed to be in an episode this season, so maybe we
that
will.
That is so cool.
Maybe
nice.
We will get to see Hulk versus your Absorbing Man.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I really like the progression of the characters. Obviously, some time has passed since the end of the first season.
Yeah, I think like 5 months in the show.
Yeah, but I like Skye's no longer kind of the rookie anymore, you know? Like, she's a part of the team. And how May has kind of taken Coulson's role as sort of leading the team. And everything is in the open from last season. I mean, we know that May is there to keep an eye on Coulson and make sure he's okay after dying.
And let's talk about the heartbreaking Fitz.
Oh, my God. My heart
that
ripped
sucks.
Into.
Fitz, who after the underwater experience he had experienced at the end of season one, has half the intelligence he used to be.
Which is probably still a good amount.
But he, the big reveal at the end of the first episode is that Simmons is a figment of his imagination.
Yeah, because you go through the whole episode and you see Simmons there with him. And they did, and this was such a Whedon show thing to do, too.
Yeah.
You know, and they did such a great job of you don't, because I never even thought of it until, like, the reveal when Coulson said, and that's why Simmons left. And you're like, what? Oh no, it's all in his head. And then you see the nice camera turn and she disappears and he's got his hand on his own shoulder like he's touching her hand. Oh, so heart-wrenching. That is possibly my favorite arc that I'm looking forward to unfolding throughout the season, because obviously, number one, if she's a figment of his imagination, we still get that character, because I really enjoyed Simmons and I loved the chemistry between her and Fitz throughout the whole first season, especially in those last few episodes. She really was like an emotional anchor for Fitz, so I really will enjoy seeing that interaction, even though her character technically left. Plus, which is surprising for a Whedon show, she's not dead, so there is potential for her to come back. Maybe that's part of Fitz's arc, is that he's just going to continue to break down further and further through the season, and she's going to finally have to come back and sort of bring him back to reality, or not reality, but bring him back to where he needs to be.
Now, I'm really curious what the artifact is that they were after.
Sure, if they actually said.
You know, I've read a lot of comic books. And
any idea what it could be? Is it Asgardian?
Well, she picked it up and it started necrosis in her, so I'm thinking, I wonder if it's actually a piece of technology left from the Thor Dark World, and it's Dark Elf something Dark Elf related, from Malekith.
No, because isn't this artifact, because they had the flashback to what's her face? Agent Carter, at the beginning of the episode, and isn't that where they had the artifact?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
so
that.
So it's actually from season. World War II.
Which
so that puts it back real far. It doesn't mean it's not still alien. There could be some sort of there's obviously some sort of explanation, but it was back from there, because don't forget that was the big reveal at the end of the episode, was that the villain from Agent Carter is actually
all I know
still
is
alive and everything.
I know all I know is there is a villain. Baron Strucker has a hand that's made out of something that does a similar thing in the comic books. It wilts and kills stuff he touches.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if this is a leftover piece of whatever that Baron Strucker, now the new guy in charge of Hydra, his hand is made out of.
I just don't know why Lucy Lawless was so stupid and opened the damn case. You had the case, leave. Your mission was solved. Take it back to Coulson. Let them deal with it. Instead, she opens it up, and then when Absorbing Man shows up, she grabs it with her hand. Stupid.
Well, to be fair, a case is pretty big to carry. If you could just shove this in a bag, plus she had to verify that it was there. Just saying. But, good point, though.
The thing is, Lucy Lawless is supposed to be in several episodes, but she clearly looks dead.
You know what? She'll be back as something.
Deathlock et.
Yes, Deathlock
I'm trying
Lock
to
et.
Think what even...
She's Deathlock.
Because doesn't she die in the comics, too, this character? Because wasn't she, like, Victoria Hand's lover or some shit like that?
News to me.
I remember reading something about that. Once again on like IO9 or something.
My thing is, I completely missed what her character's name was in the show when I watched the first
Isabel episode. Hartley was the character.
It sounds familiar.
So it is at least somebody. Well, keep in mind, don't forget that the one guy on her team, the one that cut her hand off, he's still alive.
Lance Hunter, I think.
So he's obviously going to make it back to Coulson's team, and he'll probably become a regular for the season.
Yeah. And, of course, starting up in the spring section, Agent Carter's six-part series will be starting as well.
I like what they're doing with this in that it's going to be in the exact same time slot as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. goes on its mid-season break, instead of showing reruns, that's when they're starting Agent Carter. I think that's a fantastic idea because they know that it's going to be the same fan base watching both of these shows. Oh, yeah. So I think that's a great idea.
I love Dum Dum Dugan. He was awesome.
I really hope for Agent Carter they introduce like Baron Zemo and shit like that.
I love the connectivity between the two shows, because don't forget Triplett, who's now part of S.H.I.E.L.D., his grandfather was a Howling Commando. His grandfather was a Howling Commando, so now we've got, you know, they could tie back in. We've got this villain who obviously existed in the 40s, who's still around now and doesn't look a day older.
Now, it'd be cool if we could go back and talk to Triplett's grandfather.
It's quite possible.
Yeah, that would be neat.
And you never know. I mean, time travel in a comic TV show isn't out of the realm of possibility.
Now,
I don't know if they'll go that route, but...
As a final question about the S.H.I.E.L.D., we should probably move on. Who do you want to see show up in this season? Heroes and villains.
I've always been a big fan of She-Hulk, which I don't think they'll do because they're pretty guarded with Hulk himself. Mm-hmm. Although you never know, if Ruffalo's supposed to show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe that's part of the reason why.
Yeah. I would also love to see them maybe actually tie in Falcon. I would love to see them have Falcon show up from Winter Soldier again. Maybe even in the same episode that Sebastian Shaw shows up as Winter Soldier.
Possibly, yeah.
I would actually love to see them revisit an Asgardian something or other again.
Yeah.
Even if they just got Sif back or somebody.
I enjoyed all the movie tie-ins, even as simple as they were. Like the Sif one, you know, it was just, hey, look, it's Sif. She's from those Thor movies, and here she is. But it was well done. So I'd like to see more crossover, too. That would be cool. As far as villains... Honestly, I'm willing to take anybody if they'll do a decent job with them. Like, with what they did with Absorbing Man, if they can take any villain, even if it's like a C-level villain, and treat them
well,
like they did with Absorbing Man, I'm game for anybody.
I would love to see maybe Radioactive Man.
I can see that.
Up and at them. Oh, wait, sorry, wrong. Radioactive Man, my apologies.
Yes.
I would like to see the leader.
I would love to see MODOK.
Oh.
I thought the Clairvoyant was MODOK the entire series. Yeah. And I'm like, John Garrett,
Leader.
Damn.
Leader would be a good
one. Leader would be interesting because they haven't touched him since the Hulk movie when he had the Hulk blood drip on him.
I don't know how much they're clinging to that now because of all the problems that they had with...
was this the like Ang Lee movie or is this the 2008?
This was the 2008.
2008 one.
Ed Norton had, you know, kind of issues, which is why he got recast and everything. So,
but you know what? They're still saying that happened because all the tie-in stuff still happened.
Exactly.
So they could go with that.
I'd definitely like to see more of the ramifications of the Hydra being in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Are
there more AIM bad guys? Like more people who were AIM? Who could still be around?
Well, that's what I'm saying. MODOK would be awesome because MODOK is from AIM, right? So,
like, I mean, your big
or the Scientist Supreme, even
your AIM big bad was obviously dude from Iron Man 3.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean it's not still around. So for sure,
because they've talked about it in season one.
I'm touch and go with MODOK because he is a cool villain, but he looks ridiculous.
But if you turned him into some sentient computer program?
Well, exactly. Well, look what they did with, I'm having a real bad time with names here. Dude, that's the TV screen for a face.
Oh,
Zoloft.
Zoloft, yes. Look what they did.
No, it's Zola. Zoloft is an antidepressant medication.
Right, Zola. That's Zoloft.
Well, he probably, Zola probably needed some Zoloft as well. But you look at what they did with him. It was a nice callback in Winter Soldier when he just downloaded himself into the computer and they had his face on the screen.
They could bring him back too, in theory.
Yeah.
They could, yeah.
Very possible. So it's
him up on a flash drive.
It's really interesting. I'd like to see some callbacks to that. So are there any shows that we've missed we haven't covered yet?
Walking Dead, maybe.
We got Walking Dead returning. Looking forward to that.
Doctor Who, we should maybe touch on that for a minute.
Oh, we could.
Do you really like Peter Capaldi?
You know what? I think he's been doing a solid job as a doctor so far. I like the swarmy Scottish old doctor idea. I mean, he definitely has a different feel to him than Matt Smith and David Tennant had, which were more of kind of a goofy feel. So
he feels more like Chris Eccleston, like he's rough around the edges.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I like about him. He seems to be doing a decent job with that so far. So
had one complaint about this season so far. Clara leaves at the Christmas special, so we only have like 7 or 8 more episodes with her, or maybe 10, I don't know. Either way, now we're getting character development after a season. That sucks, because Jenna Coleman is a wonderful actress.
It's one of those, knowing that she's leaving and knowing that they're doing the character development now is just going to make me be pissed off when she does leave.
Exactly, because she's a wonderful actress. I think she's absolutely gorgeous. And I think she's a nice counterpoint to Capaldi. And I don't know. I'm really hoping that our next companion is awesome. And I think Capaldi's guaranteed for at least another season or two, I think. So at least there won't be a regeneration in our immediate future.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if they'll keep him longer because, all right, the Doctor has a guaranteed 13 regenerations. We've got this established. And yet, it seems to me in the new Doctor Who, it's every 3 or 4 years. So they're going to burn through regenerations real quick. And I don't think it's a MacGuffin they should use again for another 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, right?
I'm hopeful it doesn't suck. But Walking Dead.
I don't want to get too much on this because there's a good chance that in a couple episodes from now,
we'll talk about this.
We'll be talking about this again.
Yeah, because we're gonna have a Halloween episode soon.
This season, I'm starting to wonder. I'm starting to get the feeling that the show maybe has jumped the shark after last season.
Yeah. I think it'll jump the shark after this one if what I've been reading is even half true.
Well, apparently they've got a spin-off series coming that's going to be almost more
Walking Dead Survivors.
The early days of the virus, and it's all original characters. Nothing of it is going to be based on the comics.
See, that could be really cool because it would show how society went to crap in a matter of like months.
Well, especially since I think they realized kind of what they had, considering one of the most popular characters in the series thus far was created for the show and isn't actually in the comics at all.
I think he is now, but he wasn't before, yeah.
Well, yeah, obviously.
See, there's a lot of murmurings that they're talking about killing off Rick, and they're talking about killing off Daryl, Norman Reedus' character. And I think that Norman Reedus, as Daryl, is the only thing that carries the show. And if they kill him off, I'm afraid that the moment that happens, show's going to tank.
Well, I think they're, and especially considering their logic for it, because you were telling me the reason they're looking at it is because they feel that the show is strong enough that they can go on without those characters, and that's fine, but that's not necessarily a reason to kill them. Just because you can do something doesn't mean
you should. And I think Norman Reedus, I honestly believe, brings in a really strong female audience to this. And I've heard a lot of girls saying, oh my god, he's so hot, but they like the show for the show too. But Daryl got them there.
I feel like his character has evolved the most.
Yeah,
like,
you look at
whenever he showed up with Merle in that first season and everything.
He was just a tough guy.
And you look at where he's at now.
Yeah. Like,
you have seen character development with his character.
Yeah.
Probably more so than any other character.
That's what I mean. Everybody's done well. It's a fantastic show. We can't argue that. But I feel like Daryl has progressed the most. Like, you know, his whole arc being without Merle, thinking he was dead, finding Merle alive again,
and then having to kill
zombie Merle. You know, I mean, he's done such a great job, and like the writers even, with progressing this character. And he's always been a great actor. I mean, I think we've all, you know, Boondock Saints. He was in Blade 2. You know, he's done a lot of great stuff.
The voice of the Punisher in the newest animated.
I didn't know that.
Oh, fantastic movie. Yeah, if you haven't seen the Black Widow Punisher movie, check that out.
It is awesome.
It's got a nice anime feel to the artwork and style of it, but it's a great movie.
Yeah. So I guess that's pretty much going to wrap it up for the thoughts that we have. Like I said, we are going to talk more about The Walking Dead in our Halloween episode, which will appear on Monday the 27th. So stay tuned for that stuff. So anyway, Chris, since construction is still happening on Mill Street, what's going on for sales this week at the store?
Well, sales in general are down due to the construction. However, each day this week I'm doing a different sale. Today, for example, I did a, if you spent $25 or more, you got a free poster. And on Tuesday, I'm kind of making the sales. I don't want to advertise them publicly because I would rather people come in and find out as a reason to brave the construction. You know, it's one of those things that I would rather make it know that there is a different sale each day, but you have to come into the store to investigate as a reason to come to the store and brave the construction.
It's a pain, but I've still tried to, you know, make it to get my comics every week. And if you're driving, there is parking in the Mill Street Mall parking lot behind the store, and then you just got to walk around and again, like Chris said, brave the construction. But it's definitely doable. It's just really poor timing on the city's part. And
if you look down from Broadway down Mill Street, yes, it looks like a huge, it looks like a small war went on down there, and there's like iron fences and a whole bunch of construction stuff going on. But there are sidewalks open on either side of the street. They have isolated with the fences a walking zone for pedestrians. So just because it looks like there's no sidewalks doesn't mean there is no sidewalks. So remember that the businesses on Mill Street are still open. This construction is hurting everyone on Mill Street. So please don't forget about us on Mill Street.
But don't forget, the Gauntlet's always getting in new stuff, too. Like, you've got some fantastic new bust banks in.
I got Joker and Harley Quinn bust banks. They're $20 per bank. We got some that I'm going to mention with our next episode, just because it ties completely in with our next episode, Cowabunga Dude. And for lack of a better term, come into the store. I'm getting all sorts of great new things all the time. Comics are flowing like wine.
Kick-Ass 3 just came out in graphic novels recently,
Kick-Ass
right?
3, that one of the best ones that just came out, the Deadpool minibus. It's a collection.
I saw that, yeah.
It's a hardcover volume of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, Deadpool Killustrated, Night of the Living Deadpool, Deadpool versus Carnage, and Deadpool Kills Deadpool, all in one volume.
Wow. I didn't realize it had all that in it. Jeez.
Now, one thing, Chris, I haven't even told you about that I'm going to be doing at your store during the month of October and probably beyond.
What is this, Mike?
Super Smash Brothers on the 3DS comes out soon. Ooh. I want to start Super Smash Club at the Gauntlet.
I accept.
This will be awesome. So if you've got a 3DS, you should come down to the Gauntlet. Let's battle it out, Super Smash style. But for Beyond the Gauntlet, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with
Jeff DeHaan.
And Chris, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Pedal and owner and operator of the Gauntlet.
Change the channel.